We're holding the last line of Mem Zayin Amud Beis. We looked yesterday a machlokas Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish about whether kinyan peiros kinyan aguf. If a person has an ownership of land only insofar as that he's entitled to the peiros, is that enough for it to be considered as though he owns the actual land itself? And in particular, we talked about then, would that make him that he'd be able to bring bikurim from the produce of that land and be able to say the psukim? Because in the psukim you say, Hashem nasata li Hashem, that Hashem gave, that you Hashem gave me the land, so it has to be that the land belongs to him. So we said, Rabbi Yochanan would say that Rabbi Yochanan says that you are allowed to, that you can say the psukim, it is considered your land, kinyan peiros is kinyan aguf. Rish Lakish holds that not. So now continuing on that topic, and talking more about dinim involving bikurim and involving, more about dinim involving bikurim. So the Gemara says, both Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish are going according to their respective svaras in a different case where also they have the same arguments. The Itman, Hamufa Sadeu Bizman Shah Yovel Noyim. If a person sells his field during the time when Yovel is in effect, so in other words, and when you get down to it, any sale of field at that time is you're selling it only for Kenyan Paris because the land itself is going to return to the original owner at Yovel. So Rabbi Yochanan Amar maybe the Kodei, Rish Lakish Amar maybe the Ene Kodei. So Rabbi Yochanan says that you can bring Bikurim from such a field, and you can say the Psukim, because he holds that Kinyan Peiros, Kinyan Aguf Dami, the fact that the Lekeach owns the Peiros for the next 50 years, or however long it is, from now until Yovel, nevertheless, it's still considered that he owns the land to the extent where now he's able to bring Bikurim and say the Psukim. Rish Lakish, I'm maybe the Ene Kodei, because he says Kinyan Peiros lav Kinyan Aguf Dami, because he says that it's not. You only own the Peiros, you don't own the actual land, therefore you can't say Hashem Nasata Li Hashem, therefore you can't say the Psukim. Now, so we have what seems like the same machloikas in two different cases. We have that, and we have the case of a husband with his wife's, property. We said in the case of the wife's property, we said Nichsim Alug, we said there for sure, even Rabbi Yochanan will agree that he can bring, because you have a special pasuk that says Olav Esef. So we said, according to the first version in the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan had said, Rish Lakish had said that I agree because there it says Olav Esef, then it's an exception, but normally we would say Kinyan Peiros Lav Kinyan Aguf. According to the second version of the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan says, I'm generalizing from that. Once it says, that a husband can bring Bikurim and say the Psukim, when it comes from his wife's Nechasim, then Rabbi Yochanan says, I generalize from that to any case of Kinyan Peiros. So no, the previous case was actually a Mochos Sadeu LePeiros, which is at the time when Yovel is not in effect, and a person sells his field just as far as Peiros. So like we learned yesterday, for example, he tells him, for the next 10 years, you'll be entitled to have the Peiros of this field, and afterwards I get the field back. You have arrangements like that that it discusses in both Metzia and Eilu Metzias, in Ezer Neshech. You have various kinds of arrangements like that, some of which run into problems of Ribis. There's one kind called Mashkanta Desura, where according to most Rishonim, it does not. So you have the same machloikas in both cases, one where he sells the Peiros for the next 10 years, and the other one where he's selling at the time where Yovel is in effect, and both them, Rabbi Yochanan, are saying maybe the Kodei, and Rish Lakish is saying maybe the Ene Kodei. So the Gemara says, Utsricha, we need both of those machloikas. And we couldn't have said if they argue in one place, we could automatically understand the other. No. Because we only had in the first case where Moshe Sadeu LePeiros, you would say Bahi Kama Rish Lakish. You know why Rish Lakish says maybe the Ene Kodei? Because the Kinochis adaita the Peiros Kinochis. Because the fact is, when he goes into the field and starts using it, he knows that he has only the Peiros. So he knows that he's never going to get the Kalka even for a short time. Aval Bahach, but when it comes to buying it during the time when Yovel is in effect, the Adaita the Gufa Kanochis, he does have in mind when he's taking over the field that he does have the goof of the land until Yovel, and Yovel is going to have to return it. But up until that point, he does have an ownership of the goof of the land. So you would think Ema Moidulay Rabbi Yochanan, so maybe he should agree with Rabbi Yochanan that in that case, maybe the Kore, because he does have in mind that he should be able to own the land for a period of time. It's my Bahor. And on the other hand, if we only had the Machloikas over here, but when Yovel is in effect, you would say the opposite. Bahor Ka'amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan's only talking in a case of Yovel where he knows that he is getting the goof of the land for a while. Ava Bahor. But when it comes to the other, maybe he would agree with Rish Lakish and say that Kinyan paid us Lavka Kinyan Aguf. Therefore, we needed to present the Machlokas in both cases. There is actually a slight difference in that when he buys it, Bisman Shah Yovel Noyeg, not only is he entitled to the payers until Yovel, it is true, he does have a certain extent of ownership over the land itself. For example, he's allowed to dig in it. If he had bought the field exclusively for payers, like in the first example on the previous Amud, then he wouldn't be allowed to do anything to the land itself. All he's allowed to do every year is go and pick the fruit and the produce and keep it for himself. When he buys the land, he is entitled to dig wells, ditches and whatnot in it and do other things like that. He just has to return it in Yovel. So actually, the Ktsos points that out and says that we're going to have soon a discussion about how this whole matter works out as far as Kinyan Peres and Kinyan Aguf and Yovel and Bikurim and all that. We're going to get into a point about that at the bottom of the Amud, that there seems to be a contradiction over here. So we're going to talk about a lot of answers. One of them is the Ktsos says there is in fact a difference. There is in fact a difference in that over here, Bizman Shah Yovel Noyeg, the fact is he does have an ownership of the land itself. He can dig in it and whatever, as opposed to when he buys just for Paris, where he does not have those rights. Okay. So the Gemara says Toshma. Let's try to bring another proof for this Machlokas of Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, let's focus on the second Machlokas, where he sells a field or whatever, when Yovel is noyeg, where then comes Yovel, the field is going to return to the original owner. So Braisa says, if a person buys a tree and land around it, now soon we're going to talk about when a person buys three trees or more, automatically he gets a certain amount of land with them. But when he buys one or two trees, he doesn't automatically get land with it, just like the footprint of the tree itself, just like enough space around the tree to be able to walk around and collect the fruit. So, but here we're talking about that explicitly he bought together with it the land surrounding the tree. So the Braisa says maybe, so this is actually a Mishnah, not a Braisa. This is one of the Mishnayos they would be quoting, says maybe the Kore. He's able to bring Bikurim, and he's able to say the Psukim. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, we understand, but according to the Shlokish, why is he maybe Bikurim? Isn't it going to be returning in Yovel? And the answer is, Hocha Maiskin, Rizman She'ena Yovel Noyeg, we're talking about over here when Yovel is not in effect. So now for sure he has Kinyan Aguf. He bought this tree and the land around it. He's going to be keeping the land indefinitely. So therefore, he would have the right to say, Asher Nasata Li Hashem. What we're talking about before is where he bought only for Paris. So yes, if the Mishnah had been talking about Bizman Shah Yovel Noyeg, then yes, it would be a problem on Rish Lakish. But because it can be talking about equally well Bizman Shah and Yovel Noyeg, then there's no question on him. By the way, Rashi points out, had he only bought the tree and he didn't buy any land with it, then in fact he wouldn't be able to say the psukim because then he can't say ha'adama asher nasata li Hashem, the land that Hashem you gave me, because he doesn't own any land. In fact, even when the person owns the tree, he owns the land underneath it, but not really in the sense that if the tree dries up or gets chopped down or whatever, then he has no more rights to that land. And the other guy just tells him, okay, take your firewood and go. Anyway, so no proof against that. No proof against the Shlokish from that. Toshma, let's try to bring another proof from another Mishnah over there in Bikurim. If a person buys two trees in somebody else's field, where again, two trees doesn't automatically come with land, and here we're talking about he bought two trees and he did not buy land, So therefore, maybe the Ein Kori, he brings Bikurim from those trees, but he doesn't say the Psukim. Ha, Shloisha Ilanis, Ha, Shloisha, maybe the Kori. So the implication would be that if he had bought three trees, where then he actually gets a certain amount of land with them, then he gets the land underneath the trees and between the trees. So if he buys three trees, the implication seems to be maybe the Kodim, that he's able to bring, that he's able to bring the Kodim and say the Psukim. Again, according to the Shlokish, why? It's only Kenyan Peres. And the answer is again, Hokinami was Manchena Yovel Noyeg. You could say that again, this is talking about when Yovel was not in effect. But had Yovel been in effect, then yes, you couldn't say that he would be saying Bikurim because he only has Kenyan Peres. However, the Gemara says, "Vahashta the Amr of Chista." But now that we have an explanation of Rav Chista within the Machlokas of Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, where Rav Chista clarifies what they're arguing about, Machlokas be Yovel Sheni. The whole argument between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish is only in the first Yovel. Is only in the second Yovel. But when it comes to the first Yovel, everybody would agree that you do bring the Bikurim and you do say the Psukim, because they don't yet have the Smichus Das to know that the fields are going to be returned. So Rashi explains, Yovel Shrishin and Yovel Sheni means historically. You have the first Yovel that the Jewish people observed after they came into Eretz Yisrael. You're talking, there's Gemara in Kiddushin, that says that that calculates it was over 100 years after they had first received the mitzvah, because they received the mitzvah by Dabar Hashem Moshe Bahar Sinai Lamer. They received it when the Torah was given. Then they had 40 years in the Midbar. Then they had 14 years of Kibush V'Chiluk, of dividing, of conquering and dividing Eretz Yisrael. And only then did they begin counting towards Shmitas and Yovos, and of course it takes 50 years until Yovel. So adding it all together, the Gemara finds over there it's over 100 years after Matan Torah before they had the first Yovel. Anyway, so Yovel Rishon then would be historically that first Yovel during the time of the Shoftim, and Yovel Sheni, and thereafter would mean the second Yovel and the subsequent Yovelim after that. The point is, Rashi says that the first Yovel, there's no Smichus Das yet because people are not used to the idea. It's an unusual thing that you should have to return all the lands that you bought anytime during the last 50 years. You should have to return them to the original owners. So a person doesn't yet have the mental certainty that he's going to get back his field and that the other guy is going to give it back to him. So that the other person himself is like almost like two minds about it. So therefore, there's not yet a smichus das, and therefore you could say that. Therefore, you could talk about when he bought land during Yovel, that we bought land when Yovel was in effect. Maybe not necessarily is it actually going to be returned. There might be a Kenyan Peres, but it might actually wind up being a Kenyan Aguf. But when it comes to the second Yovel and on, once it's already been, people are used to from the previous time that they remember that the fields were given back. And now they're used to this, the idea that it will happen again. So therefore, there's more of a smichus das. So therefore, there's more of a certainty that it is only Kenyan Peres. And now there would be the argument whether Kenyan Peres is Kenyan Aguf. Historically, by the way, I mean, during the time of the Shoftim, we find there were times when they were keeping mitzvahs and times when they weren't. You had the time when they weren't keeping mitzvahs and the Goyim came and persecuted and dominated them. And then you had the times in between of the Shoftim when the Shoftim had defeated their enemies and gotten them to do tshuva. So if you look at the numbers over there at the years, you actually find that at least both the first and second Yovelus took place during a time when the Shofet was running the show and making sure that everybody is following Torah and Mitzvah. So it did in fact happen that both the first and the second Yovel came out at a time like that when the people are doing the right thing and returning the fields to the owners. On the other hand, though, the Rambam has a whole different explanation of Yovel Rishon and Yovel Sheni. He says, we're not talking about the history of what happened back in the times of the Shoftim. The Meiri points out, why would we need to know that? Maida hava hava, it's a done deal. Rather, the Rambam understands, and the Pnei Yeshua understands, there are other reasons for the Rambam to be saying this. Anyway, he understands Yovel Rishon and Yovel Sheni means during the person's lifetime. So you have Yovel Rishon, that the person had previously sold land before the first Yovel, before Yovel, and then he got it back in Yovel. And now, 50 years later, he's still alive. and he had in between sold some of his land to somebody else. So now, so Yoivo Rishon, therefore he himself personally is not really used to the idea yet of getting back his land because he's never experienced it before. On the other hand, by the time it comes to the second Yoivo, he's already used to the idea because he remembers from 50 years earlier that that's how it was done, and therefore there's more of a smichus das, there's more of a mental assurance that he is going to get back the field. So therefore it can be considered kinyan payers. So that's why Rav Chisda is saying that machlok is only by Yoivo Sheni, but by Yoivo Rishon, it's not an ever, there'd be no machlokas. Everybody would agree. Maybe the kodei. So again, so then in that case, loy kasha. So in that case, getting back to the Gemara, then we can say there's no contradiction. You don't have to say that those mishnayos in Bikurim are talking about bisman she'ena yovel noyeg. They could be talking about bisman she'a yovel noyeg. You could say hobi yovel rishon, hobi yovel sheni. You could say that all those mishnayos are talking about during the first Yovel, so therefore we consider that the sale is a definitive sale because the person himself doesn't yet know for sure that he's getting back his land, whether because we're talking about the first Yovel historically that the Jewish people kept, or we're talking about the first Yovel that this person has experienced in his lifetime. Vahabi, Yovel Sheni, whereas Rish Lakish is talking about during the second Yovel, the second historical Yovel, the second Yovel in the person's life, where then Rish Lakish says, since we know already the land is returning, then therefore that already we can say that buying the land to begin with constitutes only Kenyan payers. The Pnei Yeshua points out in this connection, by the way, that it's not so hard to say, even if we go with Rashi's explanation that Yovel Rishon and Yovel Sheni means the historical ones from the times of the Shoftim, it's not that hard to say that a couple of Mishnayos that talk about this case of a person buying land should apply only to, for example, the one that says that when he buys two trees, he's maybe the Ene Kodei, or the one that says that when he buys one tree together with land, maybe the Kodei, to say that those are referring to the time of Yovel Rishon is not that difficult, as opposed to when we're going to talk about further down on the Amud, in general, about bringing Bikurim, then it would be much harder to say that all the halachas of bringing Bikurim apply only by Yovel Rishon, and according to the Shlokish, not by Yovel Sheni and on, and therefore further on the Gemara is going to question that one. So the Gemara says, Lema Katanoi, should we have to say that this machloikas of Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish is the same as a machloikas Tanoim? And of course, then we have the usual question of why they would be repeating the machloikas. A Braisa says, Minayim lekeach sodom me'ovim. How do we know? Suppose a person bought a field from his father, the Hikdisha. Now, we have to realize as background to this next piece that there's two kinds of things. The Torah describes, if a person is makdish, sdei achuza, which means a field that he inherited from his ancestors, then the din is, if he buys it back before Yovel, good. But if not, if he doesn't buy it back before Yovel, then it actually the koyanim buy it at a nominal price from hekdish, and then they keep it. It becomes one of their 24 matnas kohuna that they get to keep that field, bakoyan tiyach uzase, as the Torah tells us in Parshas Bechukosai. On the other hand, if the field was only a sdei mikna, if the person who was makdish it himself and bought it from somebody else, then look, he doesn't have permanent rights over the field anyway. Ultimately, in Yovel, he was going to return it to the original owner. So in Yovel, that's exactly what happens. It goes out of hekdish and returns to the original owner. So now we're talking about a field that's sort of a little bit of both. On the one hand, it is a field that his father owns, and he would have been in line to eventually yarshin it. But on the other hand, while his father was alive, he bought the field from him. So he bought a field from his father, the Ikdisha, and he was makdish that field, and now his father died, and he would be in position to yarshin that field. How do we know that that field now becomes as sdei achuza, meaning that if he doesn't buy it back from hekdish before Yovel, and Rashi adds the point based on the pasuk over there that the gizbar, the treasurer of the Beis Mikdash, the treasury of the Beis Mikdash themselves didn't necessarily keep the field. Why would they? What would they do with it? In between, they sold it to somebody else. So Reuven was makdish the field, Then, after a while, the Gizbar took that field and sold it to Shimon. So now when Yovel comes, Shimon doesn't get to keep it, because after all, it's only a Sdei Mikneh for him. It has to return to the original owner. For this purpose, we consider the original owner to be Hekdesh. So it goes from Hekdesh, and the Kohenim get it. The Gemara explains in Erchin that the Kohenim have a small amount of money for it, just because we don't want people to say Hekdesh Yotzebel Epidion, that Hekdesh can go out without being redeemed at all. But the point is, the Kohenim wind up getting it. So now, the point is, this person had bought the field from his father, so that made it a Sdei Mikneh. But now, in between, his father passed away, and now he's inheriting the field, so now it's Sdei Achuzah. So how do we know that, in fact, it turns into a Sdei Achuzah, and he only has till Yovel to buy it back, and if not, then he's going to forfeit it? Talmud Lomar. Therefore, the Pasuk says, Im es Sdei Miknasei asher lo mi Sdei Achuzah. So the Pasuk says, if a field that he bought, which is not a field that he inherited. Now, obviously, there were extra words in the pasuk over there, because if he bought it, we know he didn't inherit it. We mean, Sada Sheinu Ru'il, this Sdei Achuzah, means this din of a field that he bought. Sdei Mikneh applies only to a field that never could have become an Achuzah to him. He never would have been in position to inherit it. Yotzizu Sheru'il, this Sdei Achuzah, that excludes this case, where it could be eventually, and it does eventually, become a Sdei Achuzah, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Give Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. That's what Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon say. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir says, I agree with the din, but I learn it from a different pasuk. Minayin lalakeach sodom aviv umes aviv. Oh no, Rabbi Meir says differently. I don't agree with that din. Rabbi Meir says the din that would apply to a person buying a field from his father is somewhat different. If the father died and the son yashined it before Yovel, then Rabbi Meir says, I would not agree that that's considered Sdei Achuzah. Rather, Minayin lalakeach sodom aviv, he bought a field from his father, umes aviv, his father died, v'achakach hekdisha, and only then the son was makdish it after he inherited it. Minayin shtei lefonav k'sdei achuzah. How do we know that it becomes a Sdei Achuzah? Talmud Lomar, v'im a Sdei Miknasa, asher lo mi Sdei Achuzah. So again, the same Dirosha, Sada She'e, or slightly different version of the Dirosha, Sada She'eina Sada Achuzah. A field which is not a Sdei Achuzah is the one that that he gets back in Yovel. Yotzezu, Shehi Sdei Achuzah, as opposed to this one, is a Sdei Achuzah because he inherited it before he was ever makdish it. So Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon would be saying, in both cases, we would call it a Sdei Achuzah. Because all the more so, if we're saying that when he was makdish it, even when he had only bought it before his father passed away, and Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon still consider it a Sdei Achuzah, how much more so if he inherited it and then he was makdish it? Rabbi Meir is saying that no, only in the second case where he was makdish after his father passed away and he inherited it, then we would say we call it a Sdei Achuzah. But if he had bought it from his father and then was makdish it, then Reb Meir would say that no, in fact, he does get it back in Yovel. We don't consider it a Sdei Achuzah. By the time Yovel comes, his father has passed away and he inherited it. But when he was makdish it, at the time, it was a Sdei Mikneh, and therefore Reb Meir says it still retains that din. So the Gemara analyzes, the evil of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon nes aviv ba'achakach hekdisha lo tzrich hakra. Now Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon are saying that the case of Meir is talking about, where the father died and then the son was makdish the field, lo tzrich hakra, you don't even need a pasuk for it. It's fairly obvious that they say that because the son yashined it, and only then was he, even though he had previously bought it from his father, but now that he yashined it, then they would say that you don't even need a pasuk to tell us that now it's considered a Sdei Achuzah. So my love the Hakamitzvah. Once we understand that point about what Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon versus Rabbi Meir are arguing about, then my love the Hakamitzvah. Wouldn't we say that that's the underlying machlokas between them? The Rabbi Meir sava kinyan peres kinyan aguf gami. Rabbi Meir holds like Rabbi Yechanan, kinyan peres is considered the kinyan aguf. So then in this case, v'misas aviv hu dela yoris v'laymini. So when his father dies, so Rabbi Meir would say, why? Rabbi Meir would say, look, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, you're telling me you don't need a pasuk to tell us that if he inherited the field, and then his father, and then that if he inherited the field, his father died, he inherited the field, then he was makdish it. You're telling me you don't need a pasuk for that because it's fairly obvious. I would tell you it's not so obvious. Previously, he had bought the field from his father. Reb Meir holds the fact when he bought the field, it was only kinyan peiros. He only bought that he's entitled to the peiros, and if his father had survived until Yovel, he would have returned it to his father. So in this case, when his father died, the Mrs. Aviv Hudla Yoris Vlamidi, when his father dies, he's not really yashining anything more than he had now, than he had until now, because until now he had Kinyan Peiros, and Reb Meir would say Kinyan Peiros is Kinyan Aguf, so therefore he's not really gaining anything when his father died. If he had the field before and he has it now, the only difference is that if his father had been alive, he would have returned it to him in Yovel, but that's a moot point now. Therefore, a mayor would say that is why you need the pasuk to tell us in this case, because otherwise it wouldn't be so obvious. You would think to yourself, look, he bought it when his father was alive. Now that his father has died, he still has the exact same degree of ownership over it that he had before. Why should we consider it a steachuza? Therefore, the pasuk is telling us, no, it's still called a steachuza, and if he's makdish it, then the din of steachuza apply. Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon Savri, Kinyan Peiros, Lavka Kinyan Aguf Dami. Meanwhile, Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon would say that Kinyan Peiros is not considered the Kinyan Aguf. So to begin with, so up until now, he only owned the Peiros. When his father passes away, then he gets a new dimension of ownership over the land, namely that he's a, so now he gets a new dimension. Now he has Kinyan, now he has Kinyan Aguf. So they would say, Kinyan Peiros Lavka Kinyan Aguf Gami, Overhaul the Mrs. Aviv Hashkahu de Kayaris, regarding Kinyan Aguf, now he's getting that for the first time when his father passes away. Therefore, you don't need a pasuk to tell us when his father died and he got the Kinyan Aguf, and then he was back to shit, you don't need a pasuk. The Chiddush of the pasuk, say of Yehuda and Reb Shimon, would be only when he was makdashit and then his father died, that would be the chiddush. You would think he was makdashit while his father was alive, when he only had Kinyan Peiros, and he didn't yet have Kinyan Aguf. So then we need to be told, nevertheless, since eventually he does yaushin it before Yovel, then therefore it is considered, or he'd be in position to yaushin it, then therefore he'd, therefore it's considered a steachuzah. So if we understand the machlokas that way, then we see that they're arguing on the exact same point of Kinyan Peiros and Kinyan Aguf. So then why would Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish be repeating that machlokes? The answer is Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchok, La'olam Eimalach Ba'alma Kasavi Rav Yehuda Rav Shimon Kinyan Peiros V'Kinyan Aguf Gami. You could answer that usually Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon agree with Rav Meir and say that Kinyan Peiros is V'Kinyan Aguf. So we could say that all the Tanoim that we find over here do agree to that. Actually, Tosfos points out we do actually find a different Gemara in Bava Kamma, where we see that Rabbi Yehuda does not hold Kinyan Peiros K'Kinyan Aguf, but here the Gemara is saying, at least from this case over here involving the father and the son and the field, you can't necessarily prove that Rabbi Yehuda holds his opinion because Kinyan Peiros live K'Kinyan Aguf. He might hold it is K'Kinyan Aguf. What it is Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, they found a pasuk that they said we need to darshan. That to darshan even this case of ikdisha v'achakach mes avi, because they say lichtav rachmana imas stemik nasei asher loy achuzasei. If the pasuk wants to stress to us, if the pasuk wants to mention the case where you have a sde mikna that conceivably could have been a sde achuza as well, then it didn't have to repeat the word soda. It could have said, if it's a sde mikna say, which is not achuza say, then when he is makdashit, he gets it back in Yovel. So therefore they say, my sde achuza say, why the extra word sde? That means soda shein ru'uil is sde achuza. That means they're saying it means to include also the case where the field is not capable of being a steachuzah, yotzu should really be a steachuzah, as opposed to this case where it is capable of being one, because even when he was makdashit, even though it wasn't his yet, but it was eventually in position to become his, and therefore we can call it already steachuzah, because it's not, therefore the extra word ste in the pasuk steachuzah teaches us that point. So therefore, but ordinarily, if it weren't for that, they would say kinyan peiros, kinyan aguf. So if that's the case, then the machlokas of Yechanan and Rish Lakish is not actually following that machlokas panoyim, and therefore they can have their own independent machlokas about it. They would say, and Rish Lakish would say, there must be some other Tana who holds Kinyan Peres Laka Kinyan Agruf. Again, Tosfos points out Rabbi Yehuda himself apparently holds that in a different context. Whatever the case, he would have a basis for saying his deen. Now, Omer of Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef points out an interesting detail over here within this machlokas of Yechanan and Rish Lakish. He loved Omer of Yechanan, Kinyan Peres Kinyan Agruf Domi, if it hadn't been for Rabbi Yochanan saying kinyan peres kinyan aguf, and therefore saying, in other words, that even a person buys a field temporarily or only until yovel or whatever, that it's considered fully as though it's his field. If it weren't for that, loy motze yada v'ragla b'beis medrash, then Rabbi Yochanan would not be able to find his hands and feet in the beis medrash. In other words, as a way of saying he would have been completely contradicted by something else he says, and he wouldn't have had a way of reconciling. The Amr of Asi, Amr of Yechanan, because we have another statement that Rav Asi says, also in the name of Rav Yechanan, Ha'achen Shecholku, when brothers divide up their father's estate, Lukuchasein, they are considered like buyers. Omachzirin, Zelozeb Yovel, and the result is, in Yovel, we learned this actually earlier in the Masechta, they have to return their respective plots of land to one another in Yovel. We mentioned this back on Daf Chof Hey. We talked about it in connection with the matter of Breira. So we said that there's two different ways of understanding it. Does it actually mean that literally they trade their plots of land? So Reuven and Shimon had inherited from their father, and Reuven got the north side and Shimon got the south side. And now when it comes to Yovel, they actually have to like make a new girdle and it may wind up the other way around. Or does it mean that they just return it to the common pool and then they each take their portion from it again? We talked about that on Daf Chofei in connection with the question of Breira, that we say that if we say Ein Breira when it comes to things Daraisa, then we can't say necessarily that now after Yovel that each one is actually getting the plot of land that was meant to be for him all along. Anyway, so Rabbi Yochanan says that that's what they do. Now, the Isach Daitach Lav Kekinin Aguf Dami, if Rabbi Yochanan were to think that Kinin Peris Lav Kekinin Aguf, then how would they be able to bring Bikurim and say the Psukim? They wouldn't own the land. It wouldn't be considered theirs because they're considered only like they bought it from one another and only until Yovel, and in Yovel they're returning it to each other. So the Isak Daidach Lav Kikinin Aguftami, Loy Mashkachas, the Maisi Bikurim, you would only find the kind of person who could bring Bikurim, maybe Rashi says maybe meaning Bikurim with the Psukim, Elach Chad Bar Chad Ad Yeshua Ben Nun, only if it was an only son, the son of an only son, going back in the family all the way to Yeshua Ben Nun. Because, in other words, so only in that case would you have, if you have a Yid, when he came into Eretz Yisrael, got a plot of land, and then he had only one son, and that son yaushin the entire thing. And obviously there's no matter of lakuchas and breira and anything like that. There's no brothers to divide it with. And he in turn had one son and so forth down the generations. Such a person, according, such a person would be able to be maybe the poet. But otherwise, if Rabbi Yochanan had said, given that Rabbi Yochanan said that the brothers are considered lakuchas, if he held king and peiris, lav to king and aguf, like Rish Lakish, then he would be stuck. In any other case, if you have a person came into Eretz Yisrael in Yeshua's times and bought a plot of land, and then he had two sons, and they divided among them when their father passed away, then since Rabbi Yochanan is saying that they're considered lakuchas, then they wouldn't be able to anymore say, they wouldn't be able to anymore to bring Bikurim and say the Psukim because they don't own the land outright. It's only Kinyan Peres, and in Yovel it's going to go back. So Rabbi Yosef is saying it's a good thing that Rabbi Yochanan holds Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf. That saves him from that potential contradiction. Here the Pnei Yeshua points out, because it's one thing again, it's one thing to say before that a couple of Mishnayos are referring only to the time of the Shoftim, but to say that every Mishnah after that, to say that every din after that about people bringing Bikurim is only referring to that first Yovel when there's no Smichus Das yet, like we said above on the Amud, Rabbi Yosef considers that to be a great Joichuk. And therefore he says there's no way Rabbi Yochanan would be able to reconcile that contradiction. So it must necessarily be that he holds Kinyan Peres for Kinyan Aguf. Now, Tosfos, though, brings up the point Tosfos brings up the point, okay, but that may solve the problem for Rabbi Yochanan, but it creates a problem for us. Because this is, usually we have when there's Machlokas Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, usually the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan. But you have a few rare cases where the halacha is like Rish Lakish. One, we learned this in Yevamos. One of them is this case. So in this case, we follow Rish Lakish and say, Kinyan paid us lav Kinyan aguf. We also say, Tosfos points out, we also say that in things that are Raisa, there's no Breira, as we learned earlier in the Masechta. So therefore, if we say that the brothers actually have to return the land to the common pool and then make a new division, then not necessarily when they divide and they find that, when they divide their father's property for that matter, doesn't necessarily mean that each one is getting the plot that was considered to be theirs in the first place. Rabbi Yochanan is saying over here, they're considered lakuchas, it's considered they're buying from one another, because to begin with, when they divided, even though Reuven ends up with the north and Shimon with the south, it didn't have to be that way, and therefore, in effect, Reuven has bought the north side of the property from Shimon, and vice versa. So there's that, and Rabbi Yochanan is saying over here, they actually return the land to one another in Yovel. So leaving aside what Rabbi Yochanan would say, how he would reconcile the things that he does, how are we reconciling it? If we hold the brothers are considered b'kuchas, and Tosfos points out a number of other Gemaras where it also says the brothers are considered b'kuchas, and we also say that in Breira, and we also say that the halacha is like Rish Lakish, then how is all this going to fit together? How are we going to say that people would ever bring that people would ever be bringing Bikurim with the Psukim, unless, like the Gemara says, he was an only son, the son of an only son, etc., going all the way back to Yeshua ben Nun. So Tosfos discusses a few possibilities. Maybe when we say the halacha is like Rish Lakish and say Kinyan Peiros, Lav Kinyan Aguf, is only in certain cases. Maybe we don't say it across the board. You have a case where it talks about in the Gemara in Baba Basra where a person writes out a document giving his son his property, and he says, "Me'ayyorim ul'achan misa." So right now, the son doesn't fully own the property yet, but when the father dies, then the son will own it retroactively to then. So then we would say, "Kinyan peiros lav kinyan aguf dami," because the father is willing to be moichel the guf to his son as well. But usually, Tosfos says, maybe we would say, "Kinyan peiros kinyan aguf," and therefore there's not a problem. So that's one answer. That's one answer of Tosfos. Another answer is that only Rabbi Yochanan would say the brothers actually have to return the property to each other in Yovel. The other Amiroyim would say, yes, they're considered lakuchas, but they don't actually have to return it to each other in Yovel. So those are two answers in Tosfos. Then there's a lot of discussion about this among Rishonim and Achronim. There's a lot of discussion about reconciling this whole matter and dealing with Tosfos' question of how we deal with it, given these facts that we say Kinyan Peiros Lav Kinyan Aguf, and they don't necessarily accept Tosfos' first answer that that's only in some cases. It seems like we say it in many other cases as well. And again, you have the point if we're saying that the brothers have to return the property. So the Rashba, for example, so the Ramban actually the Ramban gives an explanation that more similar to this to Tosfos' second answer, and a couple of other Rishonim give that away, that even if we say Ein Breira and we do consider the brothers like the Kuchas, nevertheless they don't have to actually return the land to each other in Yovel. It's only considered that it's only for certain purposes in Halacha do we consider them the Kuchas. Then you have the Rashba talks further about it and says that so similarly he says that they're not considered lakuchas except for certain purposes. Then you have the Meiri gives a different answer that when it comes to Bikurim there's a difference from other kinds of things. Regarding Bikurim we can call it Kinyan Aguf even if they do have to return the land to one another in Yovel. And maybe they're not actually literally returning the land, they're just sort of symbolically doing it. And then you have, so all the Rishonim deal with that issue. Then on top of that, you have Achronim deal with another point as well, that the, so we could answer, Tosfos could always answer, for example, that we don't say Kinyan Peres to Kinyan Aguf only in certain restricted cases, or that we don't hold, or that only Rabbi Yochanan holds that the brothers have to return to another. But you come to the Rambam, then you have a big problem, because the Rambam actually holds that, for many purposes, he says Kinyan Peres any to Kinyan Aguf, on the other hand, and he says that in connection with Dine Mominus and in connection with Bikurim, Kinyan Peres and Kinyan Aguf. On the other hand, he says that the brothers, he says the brothers do Machzir and Zelo Zebel. He uses the expression, Loitzi Botel Halukosin Mikmos Shahoysa. You don't undo the division as it was, which, the Pnei Yeshua understands, so the Abedirkas HaZebach understands that to mean a different din that it has to do if they sell one another to Inyovel. And then Pnei Yeshua explains that no, it means they still keep their original plots of land. They just sort of symbolically return it. Anyway, so with the Rambam, you also have the problem if Kinyan Peres and Kinyan Aguf, and if the brothers do have to return to one another in Yovel, then how is anybody going to be caught in with the psukim? So you have the Lech Mishnah gives an explanation that basically that the brothers, to begin with, when they redivide the land, they want to give each other not just a Kinyan Peres, they want to give each other a Kinyan Aguf, even though they're going to have to return it to each other in Yovel, because they know they want their brothers to be able to say Parshas Bikurim when they bring the Bikurim. So that would be one answer, that even though they all consider Lekuchas and they do return to one another in Yovel, nevertheless, they themselves being Lekuchas have in mind that they want to give Kinyan Aguf in this case in order to enable their brothers to be able to say Bikurim and to be able to bring Bikurim and to say the Psukim. The Pnei Yeshua goes and discusses this in some detail, and he gives more answers he says very simply, we said before, Yovel Rishon and Yovel Sheni, the Rambam's understanding of Yovel Rishon and Yovel Sheni, we said, does not mean the first historical Yovel and the second historical Yovel, but rather the first Yovel in a person's lifetime versus the second. And we said, when it comes to the first one, everybody would agree, Kinyan Peres for Kinyan Aguf, because there's no smichus das yet. Well, very well. The Rambam holds the first yovel, then no problem. Even Rabbi Yechanan would agree that you can bring Bikurim and say the psukim. And Rambam Pnei Yeshua says, look, how likely is it that a person then is going to live long enough to experience the second yovel as well, and then for it to be an issue? Most people are only going to experience the first yovel, and by the time the next yovel comes by, 50 years later, they've already passed away. So therefore, it's much more likely. Now, so in other words, when the Gemara is saying Rabbi Yochanan would have been contradicting himself, that was before we came up with the point that before Rabbi Yosef had heard of Rabbi Chista's work about Yovel Rishon and Yovel Sheni. Now that we have in the Gemara Rabbi Chista's point about Yovel Rishon and Yovel Sheni, then it's not such a contradiction. So that's one explanation that the Pnei Yeshua gives, that only Yovel Rishon, that we're talking after Yovel Rishon, they would be able to bring Bikurim with the Psukim, even if we hold Kinyan Peres live to Kinyan Aguf, because that first Yovel we would hold Kinyan Peres to Kinyan Aguf. So therefore that would work out nicely. And then he goes on to say another explanation. He says, when we say Ein Breira, really, it means, in other words, there's a suffix whether Yesh Breira or Ein Breira. So therefore, misuffix, they're returning the land one to another, is to be on the safe side. But afterwards, each one takes back his original property. So therefore, again, that's what it means. And in fact, he says that's what the Rambam means. Loiti Botu Chalukosim Mekmos Shehoysa, that the original division does not get Botu, meaning, in other words, that they go back to the original plots of land. So therefore, it would also work out. So that would be another way of working out the seeming contradiction in the Rambam and the seeming contradiction between the halachas. And then there are a lot of other Rishonim and Achronim that deal with various angles of it. One of them we mentioned before, the Ketzos, says very simple. The Gemara all this time has been assuming that the sale of land when Yovel is in effect is exactly the same as Kinyan Peiros, but not necessarily, because the fact is the buyer does have a certain ownership of the land itself to be able to dig ditches in it and so forth, and therefore they're not really necessarily absolutely the same. Okay. So the Gemara says, Amar Rava, Kro umas nisim asayle l'rish lakish. There's a pasuk and a mishnah that support a brisa rather that support Rish Lakish that make it more likely that Rish Lakish's opinion is the correct one that we should follow la law. Kra, you have a pasuk because the pasuk says about when you're selling land during the time when Yovel is in effect. It says the mispo shnei tvoris yimko lach. He sells you according to the number of years of probes. So in other words, we see that you're not buying the land itself. You're really only buying the tvuos, the produce of every year. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, that wouldn't really be so. According to Rabbi Yochanan, we'd say kinyan peiros, kinyan agvuf. So why is the pasuk stressing that you're only selling the tvuos? According to Rish Lakish, the pasuk fits much better. And masnisa, where is the braisa? The tanya. B'chur noto pishnayim b'sodach hazeres la'ovu b'yovu. A b'chur gets a double portion of a field that will be returning to his father in Yovel. Meaning, in other words, that we're talking about that his father had sold the field. He didn't live until Yovel, so that he never did get back the field. But now, after he passes away, Yovel will come and the field will return to him. So, nevertheless, it's still going to return to the estate, and it will be divided up among the brothers. Rashi points out it can't mean that the father got back the field in Yovel and then he passed away, because then there's no chiddush in it, of course. Then the land belongs to him again. Of course, it gets divided among his heirs. The point is, even though the goof of the karka, because the goof of the karka was never owned by the buyer, because the father was still considered to own the goof of the karka, therefore it's considered muhsek. If not for that, We have a concept that says that a b'chur does not get a double portion b'roi k'muchzak. When you have property that potentially is going to be the father's, say, for example, you have somebody else that the father is in line to yaushin from, and then that person, and then the father passes away, and he never ended up yaushining that property, we don't say eventually when that property is yaushin, when that other person passes away, then we should say the b'chur gets a double portion of that, because it was only roi, it was only something that could have been the father's when he passed away, it wasn't actually his yet. And you have other examples like that in Shas. Rashi brings from the pasuk that the Gemara mentioned in Bava Basra that tells us that point. But here we don't consider it roi; we consider it muhsak because the father has a chazaka in the land because he actually still owns the land and he only sold the peiros to the other guy. So that braisa again fits much better with Rish Lakish's opinion. And again, like Tosfos said before, the Gemara in Yevamos tells us this is one of the few cases where the halacha is like Rish Lakish against Rabbi. So the Gemara finishes off, Amar Abaya, Naktinan, we have the Kabbalah from our Rebbeim, Baal B'nifse Ishtay, going back to, we talked about previously on Mamzayin Amar Beis, a husband and his wife's Nechasim, or Nichsim Belug, where he's only entitled to pay this from them, so a husband regarding his wife's Nechasim, Tzorich HaShah. If he wants to argue with Beis Din against somebody else about the goof of the land, and the land itself belongs to his wife, Tzorich HaShah, he needs a power of attorney from his wife. Because if he were to just go to Beis Din and start arguing against that other person and summon that guy to Beis Din, the other guy could say, Lav Baal Dvarim Yidiat, you're not my Baal Din, you have no standing to argue against this property belongs to your wife. If he wants to argue about it, then let her come to Beis Din herself. So the husband would actually need, Abaya says, the husband would need a hashah, an official paper from her that says that she's giving him reshus to argue on her behalf. Almost like a power of attorney, almost like lahavdo when you hire a lawyer or something. However, the Gemara says, however, this is only talking about where the husband's argument with the other person has nothing to do with the peiros. He's just arguing over the karka itself. Abel nochis haperi. But if he's arguing, suppose you have, for example, you can have a case where the other guy is claiming the land, but he's saying the peiros I agree until now belong to you. Right? And then you can have a case where the other guy is claiming the payrus as well. So if the other guy is claiming the payrus and the husband owns the payrus, then since the husband has the right on his own to go and be arguing regarding the payrus because those belong to him, then already he's also able at the same time to argue about the guf even without having a shtar harshah. So, because now the other guy can't say la balvon didia, because the husband can say, look, I already have a case against you because of the payrus, and all I'm doing is I'm folding into it the argument over the karka itself, and I don't need a harshah in order to do that. Okay. Hadran alocha shaleich. This next perek, Hanizokin, continues with topics of Tikkun Olam. And at the end of it, we're going to have a couple of things that are related to that. The Chacham said, "Mipnei Darkei Shalom." And then after that, then the next parak, then we're finally going to get back to dinim involving gittin themselves. But here we have this parak continues on matters of Tikkun Olam, and so it starts out with dinim having to do with dinim mominus. Tosfos points out the only reason we have it over here is because of it's interesting. Tosfos says we have things that seem to be switched around. We have a perek here that begins Hanizokin, which sounds more like it should belong in Bava Kama, and on the other hand, the last perek of Bava Basra is called Get Poshut, which on the face of it belongs in Masechta Gittin. So Tosfos says this one belongs over here in Gittin because, again, even though Gittin is not the place to talk about Nizokin, but it is the place to talk about Tikkun Olam. So therefore it includes it. As far as that parrot, Get Poshut, it belongs in Baba Basra because it's not only about Gittin, it's really talking about the dinim of how shtaris in general are written. So therefore it serves as kind of a fitting conclusion to Masechta Baba Basra, which is all about dinim ominous. So you really have, like, this parrot and Get Poshut, Tosfos is saying, almost seem like they switched positions, but that's why. Anyway, the Mishnah starts off, Hanizokin Shaman Lahem Be'idus. A person who has a mazik has to pay a nizik with idus. Now, what we mean is that if he's giving him karka, so if he's giving him metaltlin, if he's giving him money or metaltlin, then he can give him whatever kind of metaltlin he wants, the Gemara tells us in Bava Kama. Because metaltlin can be taken someplace else and sold, therefore even the worst metaltlin, the expression the Gemara is over there, even bran, you could always take it someplace else and sell it and convert it to cash. Since land is not movable, then you have instead, the Torah tells us that if a person damages somebody else's field or whatever, mate of Sadehu, mate of Kami Yishalim, he has to pay from the best of his field and the best of his vineyard, so therefore, and that's the quality of land that's called in Gemara terminology, Idis. The Tosfos read refers to, there are places in Targum where it uses a word in Lashon Kodesh for beautiful, like in Eicha, for example, you have the expression Eis Kol Na'os Yaakov, and the Targum of it is Eis Kol Idis Yaakov. So we see that Idis means the best. So in Zokin, the Torah tells us they get from the best quality land. Or Baal Choyv the Bainis, a Baal Choyv, if he's coming to collect from land, he gets only Bainis. And the Gemara is going to talk about that, really, Midar Isa, he would have gotten only Ziburis, but Midar Abanon, he gets Beninis because we don't want to discourage people from wanting to lend others. Of course, either way, he's getting the same value of land. If the debt was $100, then in the case of Idis or Beninis or Ziburis, he is getting $100 worth of land. But the fact is, a person might well rather have Idis, a small plot of Idis, which is easier to take care of, rather than a large plot of Ziburis. So if a Baal Choy was only going to get Ziburis, then people wouldn't bother lending to one another, and therefore the Chacham said that he gets Beninis. Uksubas Isha b'Ziburis. A woman's ksuba gets paid out of Ziburis. Rashi explains, all of them are going to be examples of Tikkun Olam, the fact that we have all these things. In the case of a woman, when she's getting married, she doesn't necessarily mind so much that she may only get Ziburis, because we have the expression that the Gemara mentions in other places, even more than a man wants to get married, a woman wants to get married, so therefore it's not going to disincentivize her from getting married, knowing that she's getting only Ziburis. Tosfos discusses also, if we say, and we learned in Ksubas, the possibility that maybe the Ksuba of Absula is Daraisa, so then in that case, then she ought to get Idis, why the Chacham downgrading her all the way to Ziburis? And the Tosfos brings a couple of reasons. One idea is that you don't want, the Gemara is going to discuss later on, you don't want, for example, a Baal Choyv is going to think, I have a good way to get this other guy's Idis. I'm going to lend him money. He'll default, and then I'll end up getting his Idis. Therefore, Chum said, all he gets is Daininess. The same way with a woman, the Chum didn't want that she's going to go and marry him for his money, basically. And then since Yosem, Then, therefore, it won't disincentivize her, and just the opposite. We don't want it that she's going to play a trick like that and marry him for his money, basically, in order to get his idis or his bains. So again, you have both. Because of that is why we don't want her to get idis, and because we don't have to worry about that, she won't have an incentive to get married, because Yosemi, she wrote to Lisa, etc., is why we can downgrade her all the way to Ziburis and not have a problem. That's what Joseph says. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. Reb Meir Omer, Ksubas Isha Rebeinus. Reb Meir disagrees and says that Ksubas Isha is Beinus. He himself holds, Tosfos points out, he holds Ksuba Deraisa. So he says, fine, to downgrade her from Idis to Beinus, that we can do. To downgrade her all the way to Ziburis, we shouldn't be doing that. How does the word Ziburis, by the way, come to mean the worst? Tosfos Yid says a vote. He says that it stands for Zuburis. Bur is like a field that's empty. It's also used of a person who's empty, of Torah and of Midas Torah and whatever. So Ziburis is short for like Zuburis. This one is empty because it's a very hard kind of land to work, and therefore many people don't bother, and they just leave it fallow. Anyway, the mission is now going to continue. There are cases where even though a person should be getting Idis or Beinus, nevertheless they get only Ziburis. You cannot collect for a debt from Nechosim B'Shabodim where there are Nechosim B'nei Chorin available, even if those B'nei Chorin are Ziburis. Meaning, in other words, so let's say Reuven lent money to Shimon, and now Shimon defaults on the loan, and now Reuven is going to collect some land. If Shimon still owns any land of his own, then Reuven has to collect from that, even if it's only Ziburis. Only if Shimon sold all his properties, then Reuven is going around to the Lekuchas to collect from them, then he can collect from Beinus. And the same thing with all the other cases. This is another example of Tikkun Olam, because otherwise people are not going to want to buy lands from one another, because they're going to figure it may be taken away from them. Another din, ein nefroim minachosim minichs yisoyim element of ziboris. From when we're collecting from the chosim of yisoyim, we can collect only from ziboris. Again, same idea. In other words, even if it was a baal choyv or nizokin or whatever, then the nizik would still be collecting idis, and then the malhu would be getting beinus. And now we're saying that he gets only ziboris. Tosfos brings up the point that okay, when it comes now why is that? When it comes to a Baal Choyv, we can understand. Even though normally we're saying we're concerned about Ne'ilas Gelas, we don't want people to lock their doors and say, I don't want to lend you money because I'm only going to get Ziburis. And that is why we said that's why the Chachamim allowed him to collect from Beinus, because at least gives him more of an incentive to want to lend money. So fine, when it comes to Yisoyim, the Malva doesn't necessarily think of the point when he lends the money that the father may die before the loan is paid back. And therefore, the fact that there may be a case where he can only collect Ziburis from Yisraelim is not going to disincentivize him, or is not going to discourage him from lending money. But in the case of Nizokin, where it's Daraisa, that they get Idis, why are the Chachamim downgrading them to Ziburis? And Tosfos points out that we're going to have in the Gemara a relevant machlokas about this, what we mean by Idis and Ziburis respectively. So maybe there are, according to some of the opinions in the Gemara over there, we could answer this, but what about we're going to have the opinions of Abaya and Mazutra, who say that Ziburis means just that, Ziburis, the really objective Ziburis, and nevertheless they're getting it. So the answer is either they could say, Tosfos says, either they hold that Shibud alav Daraisa. So Midaraisa, the Shibud doesn't go from the father to the sons, only the Rabbanon does it. So therefore we can be downgrading them to Ziburis. Or we could say that Chacham don't want him to start making distinctions. Once we say that Baal Choy collects from Yisraim only from Ziburis, then they're going to say the same thing as far as a Nizek as well. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. Now here you also have, in relation to this, we were saying that sometimes you can collect from the Chosim B'Shabadim, but there are exceptions where you can. Ein Metzia Nachilas Peres. You don't take out from the Chosim Shabbatim for the eating of Peres. Meaning, Rashi explains, suppose you have Reuben own a field, Shimon stole it from him, and Shimon sold that field to Levi. Levi went and planted and otherwise improved that field, and it produced Peres. Now, Reuben, originally, the original owner of the field, went and collected it from Levi. And he says, Levi, this is a field that's stolen. So all I have to pay, all he has to pay Levi is his expenses for that he put out, that he laid out money to plant the field and then to plow and plant the field or whatever. Now what happens? Levi, having been deprived of a field that he paid good money for, he goes to Shimon and demands that Shimon reimburse him for the field. So that he's entitled to collect from the Chosim Meshabadim. That he can collect even from property that Shimon sold to Yehuda, because after all, Shimon sold him the field, Bachrayis. So then there's a shtar mechira involved, so it's considered like a milvah b'shtar, therefore he can collect from that. But what about the peiris? He wants to be able to collect the value of the peiris, which otherwise he would have had. Those he cannot collect from nechosim b'shabadim, those he can collect only from nechosim b'nei chorin, for reasons that we're going to discuss in the Gemara. So that's as far as peiris, all the shvach karpois, and as far as the improvements to the land, same idea. In other words, Levi wants reimbursement for the actual improvement in the value of the land. He says, after all, look, Reuben, when the field was stolen from you, it was worth only $100. I put in a lot of money to it. You're paying me my expenses. Very nice. But the fact is, the field is worth a lot more than the extra expenses I put into it. It's already worth $150. So where is that extra 50 coming from? So that he can collect only from the Chosim B'nei Chorin. So you can only collect those from the Chosim B'nei Chorin. All the Mazin Ishava bonus, also to support the wife and the daughters. So meaning, in other words, when the husband has passed away and the Almana is being supported out of the estate, that can only be taken from the Chosim B'nei Chorin. And as far as the daughters, same idea. We learned in Ksubas, and the Gemara discusses it mainly in Baba Basra, that there's a takonis chachamim that the daughters are to be supported out of the estate until they become burgeress or until they get married. Same kind of thing. Those are collected only from the chosim nechorin. Again, they're not collected from the chosim shabadim for reasons that the Gemara is going to discuss. All of these things in the Mishnah, mitnei tikkun olam, all of these are a matter of tikkun olam in order to allow society to function well, as we'll see in the Gemara, each one of them. And the Mishnah finishes off, ba'amotzi mitziya, if a person finds a lost object, and the other person claimed that it was more thin, that there were more things in it, so Me'ikir Adin, you would be considered a Moed of Mikzas, and he ought to swear, but Lo Yishava, we don't make him swear, like a Moed of Mikzas, Mipnei Tikkun Olam, again, because of Tikkun Olam, because otherwise people are going to say, why should I bother returning the object if the guy's just going to hold me into Beis Din and make me swear that there wasn't more in it. There's actually a cute story they tell involving Rabbi Lachaim Meisel, the Rav of Lodz, about 100-odd years ago, where one time there was such a situation. A Polish poritz had lost a purse full of money, and he starts advertising for the return of it. A Yid finds it, figures he'll get the return, he'll get the reward money. He comes, the Goy figures he now has an ability to get the Yid in trouble. He falsely claimed that there was more money in the money bag than the Yid actually is returning over here. So not only I shouldn't give you the reward, I'm going to take you to court to demand the rest of that money back. The Yid goes to the El Chaim, Kipzah Maisa, the case goes to court. They have the poritz swear that there was that larger amount in it. So then Rabbi Chaim turns to the judge and he says, look, you know, the guy swore. He's obviously an honest guy. We have to take him at his word that he lost 1,000 rubles. On the other hand, this Yid is also Mistama honest. Otherwise, he didn't have to return the thing at all. He could have just kept it for himself. So Muzman Zogin says Rabbi Chaim to the judge that the purse that the poritz lost is not the same one that this Yid found, and therefore he should be able to keep it. And the judge realized what was going on over here and tackled let the Yid keep it. So, but this kind of thing that we're talking about, they took an olam in order to avoid such scenarios, is why the Chachamim made this rule that lo yishava. So even the Take in this case, the guy returns a wallet with $100, and the other guy says, no, there were 1,000 in it. We don't say he's a mode of mixas. Instead, we say lo yishava and they took an olam. So the Gemara starts off. The first thing that was saying in the Mishnah, and Zok and Shaman Lam Ve'idis, what do you mean with Beit Tikkun Olam? Daraisi. This fact that a Nizek gets from Idis is Daraisi. The Metav Sadeo, Metav Kami Yishalim. The Pasuk says he pays back with the best of his field or the best of his vineyard. The answer is Amar Abaylin, Sricha Elalar Bishmal. Yes, but the Chiddush of the Mishnah that we need, Beit Tikkun Olam, is only according to Rabbi Shmuel. He says, Midaraisa, we would go according to the value of the fields of the Nizak. Meaning, in other words, so let's say, for example, the Nizak only has, the Nizak has certain qualities of land, but the Mazik has far better ones to the extent that the Ziburis of the Mazik is equal to the Idis of the Nizak. So then, in that case, Midaraisa, the Mazik would be able to pay with his own Ziburis, because relative to the Nizak, it's considered Idis. So Kamash Malan, so then, Rabbi Shmuel is telling us that because of Tikkun Olam, instead the Chachamim made that we go according to the Mazik. So instead, we tell the Mazik, you have to pay with the best of your land, even though that's far, far better than the best that Nizak has, because it's the best of yours. It's Idis relative to your profits. So that would work to that sort of thing. My Rabbi Shmuel, where do we see Rabbi Shmuel talking about that? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. When it says Meitav Sedehu Meitav Kam Yishalem, means Meitav Sedehu Shal Nizek or Meitav Kam Yishal Nizek, Divrei Rabbi Shmuel, means you go according to the best of the fields or the vineyards of the Nizek, and the Mazik has to pay that quality of land. Again, this is talking about when he's paying with land, rather than if he's paying with Metalplin, then you don't have all these dinim, then he can pay with whatever Metalplin he wants. Rav Akiva says no. Loy bar kasev elo ligvus from Nizakim in the Idis. No, the pasuk is only coming to tell us that Nizakim collect from Idis. How much more so that Hektish also collects from Idis where necessary, which we'll talk about later on. What Rav Akiva means by that. Anyway, the point is Rav Akiva is holding that you go according to the fields of the Mazik. So Rabbi Shmuel, who says you go according to the fields of the Nizek, but he would say Medirat Bonon, they upgraded it to the fields of the Mazik. So the question is, what does Rabbi Shmuel mean exactly? Or Rabbi Shmuel, Ochal Shmena, Mashalim Shmena, what is Rabbi Shmuel saying? Suppose that one person's animal went and ate a good plot of land from somebody else's field. So it means that he has to pay in Shmena. It means that he has to pay with fat, good land, instead. Ochal Chosha, but are you telling me that if the other guy's animal ate from a scrawny plot, Mishalim Shemena, what's the logic? He should have to pay a fat plot or a healthy, good plot. Why should he have to pay more than the Hezek? And the answer is, Amarim, Idiba Oven, Tocha, Mayaskin, and Kensha, Ochla, Aruga, Bein, Harugas. What we mean is, the Pasuk is talking about, according to Rabbi Shmuel, the animal ate from one plot among a bunch of plots, and some of them are kochush and some of them are shomein. V'lo yadin ikchusha ochel ishmein ochel. We don't know the particular plot of produce that the animal ate, whether it was kosher or shmeina. So then the mashalim lemi meitav, then he has to pay for meitav. But Omar Rava says, how can you understand it that way? Either you didn't chusha ochal, mashalim chusha. What are you telling me? If we knew that that the animal ate only a scrawny one, then he would pay only a scrawny one. Now you're saying because we don't know, we should have to pay a fat one. What do you mean? So then, in that case, so if the owner of the land comes and says to Reuben, you have to pay me meitav, why shouldn't Reuben have to say, show to me that it was shmeina, and then I'll pay shmeina? So we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and explain what exactly Rabbi Shmuel means when he said meitav sedeo shal nizek or meitav kam shal nizek. We have to figure out exactly what he means, and we're going to get to the point tomorrow that means that we have like we said before, where the mazik ziburis is equal to the nizek's idis.
Yes, shakayach.